4. Chuck Tiny Gunderson was dining on sausage and slabs of cheddar cheese as he steered the Citation X and watched the mountains that lay below. Gunderson carried nearly 280 pounds on his 6'4" frame and had played tackle at the University of Wisconsin before graduating and getting recruited by the Defense Intelligence Agency. Gunderson's experience with the DIA had enhanced his love of flying, which he'd transferred into his job later in the private sector. Right now, however, Gunderson was wishing he could have a bottle of beer with his lunch. Instead, he finished a warm bottle of Blenheim's ginger ale to wash it all down. Checking the gauges every few minutes, he found them all in the green. "Mr. Citation is happy," he said as he patted the automatic control switch and checked his course. Spencer made his way forward to the cockpit, knocked on the door, and opened it.
"Has your company made arrangements with the armored car to meet us at the airport in Macau?"
"Don't worry," Gunderson said. "They've taken care of everything." The port of Almain was bustling. Sampans and trading barges shared the sea lanes with modern cargo ships and a few high-performance pleasure crafts. The wind was blowing from land to sea, and the smell of wood-cooking fires on mainland China mixed with the scent of spices being offloaded. 12 miles out in the South China Sea, and only minutes from landing, Gunderson received clearance for final approach. Spencer stared at the golden Buddha strapped down on the floor across the aisle. At the same instant, Juan Cabrillo was enjoying an espresso after a meal of Chateaubriand, mixed vegetables, a cheese plate, and baked Alaska for dessert. He held a napkin to his mouth as he talked from the head table in the ship's dining salon. "We have a man on the ground in Macau," he said. "He'll arrange transportation once we have acquired the Buddha."
"What's his plan?" Hanley asked.
"He's not sure yet," Cabrillo admitted. "But he always comes up with something." Tseng was next to speak.
"I've retrieved detailed maps of the port, streets, and entire city," Tseng said. "Both the port and the airport are less than a mile from where we believe the Golden Buddha will be taken."
"That's a good twist of luck," Linda Ross said.
"The entire country's only 7 miles square," Tseng said.
"Are we planning to anchor offshore?"
Mark Murphy asked. Cabrillo simply nodded.
"Then I need GPS numbers for the entire country," Murphy noted, "just in case."
Another hour would pass as the corporate officers hashed out details. The man said quietly. The man who would benefit the most from the return of the Golden Buddha had no idea of the maelstrom of activity surrounding him. He was meditating in a tranquil rock garden outside a home in Beverly Hills, California. Now, nearing 70 years old, he seemed not to age as did ordinary men. Instead, the passage of time had simply molded him into a more complete human being. In 1959, the Chinese forced him to flee his own country for India. In 1989, he'd received the Nobel Peace Prize for his continued work toward the nonviolent freeing of his homeland. In a world where a 100-year-old house was considered historic, this man was believed to be the 14th incarnation of an ancient spiritual leader. At this instant, the Dalai Lama was traveling on the winds of his mind back to home. Winston Spencer was tired and irritable. He had not had any rest since leaving London, and the dreariness of travel and his age were catching up to him. Once the Citation X had rolled to a stop on the far end of the field, he waited while the pilot made his way to the door and extended the stairs. Then he climbed out. The armored car was only feet away with the rear doors open. To each side of the vehicle was a guard in black uniform with a holstered weapon. They looked about as friendly as a lynch mob. One of the men approached.
"Where's the object?" he asked directly. "In a crate inside the main cabin," Spencer said.
The man motioned to his partner, who walked over. At just that instant, Gunderson climbed down the stairs.
"Who are you?" one of the guards asked.
"I'm the pilot."
"Back in the cockpit until we're finished."
"Hey!"
Gunderson started to say as the larger of the two men grabbed his arm and shoved him into the cockpit and slammed the door.
Then the two men eased the crate onto a roller ramp to the ground. They pushed the crate on the ramp right into the truck. Two men couldn't lift it. Once it was inside, the truck was pulled forward so they could shut the doors. One of the guards was locking the doors when Gunderson reappeared.
"You can be sure this'll be reported," he said to the guard.
But the guard just smiled slightly and walked forward to climb into the passenger seat.
"Ma Temple?" the driver said out of the window.
"Yes," Spencer said.
The guard pointed to a dark green Mercedes-Benz limousine parked nearby.
"You're supposed to follow us in that."
Rolling up the window, the driver placed the armored car in gear and started driving. Spencer climbed into the limousine and set off in pursuit. The armored car and the limousine carrying Spencer crossed the Macau Taipa Bridge, went around the cloverleaf, past the Hotel Lisboa, and headed up the Infante Don Enrique until the name changed and the road became San Mola, or the New Road. On the west end of the island, they reached the intersection of Hoa Dais Loxias and headed south along the waterfront. The waterfront was like a scene from an adventure movie. Junks and sampans floated on the water, while the street along the water was crammed with shops displaying everything from plucked chickens to silver opium pipes. Tourists stood snapping pictures while buyers and sellers negotiated prices in the sing-song staccato of Cantonese. At the fork with Rua do Almirante Sergio, the caravan veered slightly left, drove past the bus terminal, then entered the grounds of the Ama Temple. The temple was the oldest in Macau, dating back from the 14th century, and it sat on a densely wooded hill with a view of the water. The complex held a total of 5 shrines, linked by winding, pebbled paths. The smell of incense was in the air as Spencer climbed from the limousine and walked to the armored car. At just that instant, someone lit a coil firecracker to chase away the evil spirits. He instinctively ducked, staring up at the driver's open window.
"Are you okay, sir?" the driver asked.
"Yes,"
Spencer said sheepishly, rising again to his full height.
"I need to step inside for a moment, if you will just wait here."
The driver nodded, and Spencer walked up the path. Entering the Ama Temple, Spencer walked to a rear room he knew the leader of the monks used as an office and knocked on the door. The door opened, and a shaven-headed man dressed in a yellow robe stood smiling.
"Mr. Spencer," he said, "you've come for your crate."
"Yes," Spencer said.
The monk rang a bell, and 2 more monks appeared from another room.
"Mr. Spencer is here for the crate I spoke about," the head monk told them. "He'll explain what to do."
A large donation to the temple had ensured that his decoy would remain here until needed. A well-placed lie would solve the rest.
"I have a gilded Buddha outside I'd like to display for a time," Spencer said, smiling at the monk. "Do you have a space to put it?"
"Certainly," the monk said. "Bring it inside."
20 minutes later, the switch had taken place. The golden Buddha was now hiding in plain sight. 30 minutes and less than a mile away, the armored car made its final delivery of the day. After the guards were dispatched, Spencer stood with the Macau billionaire staring at the object.
"It's more than I could have hoped for," the billionaire said.
"But less than you think," Spencer thought.
"I'm glad you like it."
"Now we celebrate," the billionaire said, smiling.
Silver platters of delicacies littered the long cherrywood table in the palatial dining room of the man's estate. Spencer had passed on the monkey meat, as well as the sea urchin, and settled on poultry in a peanut sauce. Still, the spicy side dishes were wreaking havoc with his travel-weary stomach, and he wished the night would end. Spencer sat at the far end of the table, the owner at the head. A total of 6 concubines were seated, 3 to a side, in the middle. After a dessert of wild berry mousse, cigars, and cognac, the man rose from his seat.
"Shall we take a soak, Winston?" he said, "and allow the ladies to do their job."
The man had no idea he would possess the faux golden Buddha for less than a week, and Winston Spencer had no way to know he had less than a fortnight to live.